Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 627, Going Native, Part 4, Thoughts on the Secession of Kosovo. This program is being recorded on March 9th of the year 2008. As is always the case, please use the Spitfire website and linked websites, including the websites maintained by the heroic WFMU in Jersey City, New Jersey, because that will supplement the information that you hear in these broadcasts. It's particularly important, I think, for those of you who listen on the airwaves to supplement your on-air listening with a walk through the Spitfire and related websites. By the way, those of you who use the descriptions will note that increasingly the body of the articles that I use in the program itself, when I read from articles, as I will be today, those are placed in their entirety in the For the Record supplemental section. Those articles and sometimes text excerpts are reproduced for fair use only. And that will be the case with the article that's going to occupy the bulk of this half-hour broadcast. Now, the title of the program, Going Native Part 4, places this broadcast in a sequence of programs that deal with the use of Native peoples, often sincerely or genuinely abused Native peoples. However, the rights of these indigenous peoples are being championed for very unsavory purposes. The rights of these indigenous peoples are being championed by interests who would use the rights of these indigenous or abused peoples and or abused peoples as a lever for jackhammering open rival nation states within whose borders some of these ethnic nationalities thrive. So rather than championing human rights, the rights of Native peoples, as a genuine vehicle for upward social mobility and enlightened civilized living, in the context of the Going Native programs, we're taking a look at a brutal stratagem being perpetrated by, it's been perpetrated by tyrants and would-be imperial interests for, really, since the dawn of civilization. But we are particularly looking at the Underground Reich, literally a Third Reich that went underground at the end of World War II, or really shortly before the end of World War II, and which has perpetuated itself in mafia-like fashion precisely because of the fact that fascism and World War II itself were in turn outgrowths of globalization and the establishment of cartels, international monopolies, which spawned fascism, including the Third Reich, which spawned the Second World War in both Asia and Europe, which spawned the powers that prosecuted the Second World War from the fascist side, Imperial Japan and fascist Germany and Nazi Germany and fascist Italy, primarily in Europe. And then within the context of that globalized cartel system, that globalized international monopoly system, the Third Reich was able to perpetuate itself in a fashion not unlike the way Japanese fascism has perpetuated itself underground, but in a very effective way, not because of the soldiers and the long lines of combat aircraft or tanks or cannon that are placed into the field, but rather because of the tremendous corporate power, because of the tremendous amount of working capital and the things that come from working capital, including political power, that the underground Japanese Empire and the underground Reich have been able to manifest, again, because of globalization and because of cartels. There's an introduction on the Spitfire website to the various anti-fascist books that are available. That will give people a good overview of what I'm talking about. So, by the way, we'll For the Record program number 510, or maybe it's 511, where I revisit Uncle Sam and the swastika. What we're going to be looking at in this program is the German foreign policy and the German Realpolitik, which in many ways dictated not only NATO and American Balkans policy in the 1990s and now in the first decade of the 21st century, but also a German foreign policy and a German realpolitik, which uses the going native strategy, which uses championing the rights of a minority, in this case, Albanian Muslims from Kosovo, as well as Muslims, primarily Albanian, but also Bosnian, elsewhere in the former Yugoslavia, as a vehicle for breaking up Yugoslavia, and in many ways for recapitulating the most unsavory aspects of a fascist past. In, among other programs, For the Record of 532, we took a look in combination with John Loftus at the use of the Vatican as a vehicle for furthering fascist aims around the world. And one of the many fascist elements that the Vatican was associated with were Croatian Catholics in the pre-World War II, World War II, and post-World War II period. We're going to be taking a look at a very similar type of alliance, but rather we're going to be looking at the Underground Reich perpetuating a political and ideological alliance with a Muslim majority in the Balkans, a Muslim majority that has maintained the overt fascist aspects of its past, in this case the Kosovo Liberation Army's descent from, or evolution from, the 21st or Skanderbeg Waffen-SS division. That was an Albanian Muslim Waffen-SS division, the 21st or Skanderbeg Waffen-SS division that fought with the Nazis in World War II and was composed primarily of ethnic Albanian Muslims from Kosovo. It did not achieve a lot of military success. Its primary influence was in effecting some of the German extermination programs in the Balkans. But when I talk about a fascist past and a fascist present to this Muslim majority, people should be aware that Islamic fascism is a reality. And it can only be understood as in the way that it fits in with international fascism and what some authors have termed the fascist international. I want to point out here too that the article that I'm about to read by Matthias Kunzel maintains a very good focus and points out how even though the United States wound up pursuing a foreign policy in Kosovo that was similar to the foreign policy that it pursued elsewhere in the Balkans, the U.S., like other countries, including France and Britain, that allied with the German-generated policy in the Balkans, did so for their own idiosyncratic and, frankly, very selfish and cynical fashion. So I don't want to be understood here as implying that the German treachery in the Balkans is the only treachery, or that this was a German-hatched scenario in which the other players were unwilling and innocent dupes. Although the authorship here is largely German geopolitical, the players in here are by no means, the other players who wound up allying with German fascist geopolitics are by no means innocent. Note also, because we're going to continue with this analysis not only in the next program to follow, but in future programs, note the role of the Green Party in Germany and the Green coalition of Gerhard Schroeder in promoting the very same types of policies. And we're going to be looking in future broadcasts at various manifestations of counterculture fascism and fascist or proto-fascist elements within the Green Party, and in a loose alliance with, among other elements, some of the depleted uranium activism, or activist crowd, some of the so-called 911 truthers. One of the common elements of all of them being, quote, anti-Zionism, really anti-Semitism, but masquerading as, quote, anti-Zionism, and in many ways relying on a fallacious body of, quote, evidence, unquote. I also want to underscore that a lot of the people who get sucked in by some of these counterculture fascist manifestations are absolutely innocent. When I talk about, as I will in the next program, the fascist element within the Green Party and within the Green movement in general, this should not be misunderstood as impugning the sincerity or the integrity of many of the people who are involved with the Green Party and the Green Movement. However, if you are one of those people, you better take a very good look at some of the people around you, okay? All righty. And note again how going native is a vehicle for German foreign policy that contrasts very markedly with some aspects of perceived American foreign policy here. This article is from April of 2000. It's authored by Matthias Kunzel, a German author and researcher whose work on the Nazi origins of Islamic fascism and anti-Semitism we looked at in For the Record 622. This article is called Germany and the Kosovo, How Germany Paved the Way to the Kosovo War. It's authored by Matthias Kunzel, and it was contributed to the second international hearing of the European Tribunal concerning NATO's war against Yugoslavia in Hamburg, Germany, April 16, 2000. It reads, in 1991, a delegation of the German Bundestag visited Kosovo for the first time in order to talk with Kosovo-Albanian nationalist leaders. This prompted as early as 1991 the warning by a senior member of the Yugoslavian parliament that the British and the Germans would create a common intervention force with 70,000 soldiers in order to intervene in Kosovo, unquote. Indeed, an early and accurate prophecy. So what about Germany's role in preparing for the Kosovo War? Perhaps I should interrupt ever so briefly and explain a little bit of the history of the Balkans, particularly regarding World War II. Yugoslavia, the country that used to be Yugoslavia, was basically carved out of the former Austro-Hungarian Empire at the end of World War I. It contained a number of minorities, including a Serbian plurality who largely dominated politics and life in Yugoslavia. There also, the Serbs were Eastern Orthodox. There also was a large Catholic Croatian minority who formally coalesced as the fascist puppet state of Croatia under German domination in World War II. There also were a number of Muslim minorities, including Bosnian Muslims in Bosnia-Herzegovina, and also, among others, Albanian Muslim minorities in various parts of the former Yugoslavia, including Kosovo. Because Kosovo was the site of a number of holy places, plus the site of a very important battle in which the Serbs held off the invading Ottoman Turks for a period of time before succumbing to defeat, Kosovo is viewed with great vehemence by Serbian nationalists. But under German domination in World War II, both the Catholic Croatian minority and many of the Muslim minorities of Yugoslavia not only became allies, satraps of the Germans, but perpetrated bloody atrocities against the Serbs and others, Jews, communists and others, and gypsies and others in the former Yugoslavia. Many of those same Muslim and Catholic fascist and Nazi collaborators jumped to various elements of Western intelligence, including and especially U.S. intelligence, after World War II. So that's a little bit of the history here. There's a lot of information about the Balkans Wars in various For the Record shows and archive shows. Use the Spitfire websites and related websites for information there. Next, Matthias Kunzel goes on to explain the going native philosophy or a stratagem as it contrasts with a traditional and more conservative international outlook manifested by the United States, at least in some respects. There were, and there are, strategic differences between German and U.S. policies about how to retain or enhance hegemony. As a wealthy status quo power, the United States has an interest in maintaining international order, unquote, wrote Joseph S. Nye, a former U.S. Deputy Secretary of Defense, again quoting, in a world where there are some 200 states, but many thousands of often overlapping entities that might eventually make a claim to nationhood, blind promotion of self-determination would have highly problematic consequences, unquote, i.e. promoting the going native strategy. Continuing, Berlin, however, in seeking to create conditions for an ongoing expansion of German influence, that means changing the international order, does not share this priority. As Rupert Schultz, the former German Secretary of Defense, explained, quote, the aim of maintaining stability, unquote, in Europe seems to be a most dangerous one. there will not be any real stability which is able to maintain peace if individual nations are held prisoner in unwanted and unnatural or unternaturliche state organizations which have been imposed upon them, unquote. Since 1990, German foreign policy has consistently persisted in actively advocating a universal right of self-determination, unquote. By the way, just such a universal right of self-determination was advocated by Hitler and used to justify his aggression to help the German minorities and eventually other minorities in surrounding states to become, quote, self-determining, unquote. Continuing with Kunzel's paper, Germany and the Kosovo, from April of 2000, this policy has a particular bearing on Kosovo. The hidden war about Kosovo's future started in 1995 at the latest. In February of 1995, in the presence of Roman Herzog, Germany's president at that time, Germany and Albania signed a common declaration of principle at Tirana. This declaration is rarely mentioned in the literature, but nevertheless is decisive because it promised to find, quote, a solution to the Kosovo question, unquote, by advocating the right of self-determination for Kosovo's Albanians. Advocating self-determination for Kosovo's Albanians, however, meant advocating their right to secede from Yugoslavia. This declaration was a kind of advance notice for continuing Germany's 1991 course recognition of Croatia in order to further split up Yugoslavia following a racist or folkish concept of self-determination, or as I put it, going native, unquote. In the period following, the German government did everything it could to spur on the separation of Albanians within Kosovo. Germany supported and financed those nationalists who sought to pursue the goal of full independence by creating alternative governing institutions as well as independent Albanian educational and medical systems in Kosovo, which systematically separated the majority of the people in Kosovo from the other peoples of Yugoslavia. In addition, German secret diplomacy was instrumental in helping the Kosovo Liberation Army, or KLA as they call themselves, since its creation in February of 1996. The daily newspaper The European stated that, quote, German civil and military intelligence services have been involved in training and equipping the rebels with the aim of cementing German influence in the Balkan area, unquote. During those years, Germany unilaterally supported the secessionist movements. In 1997, editor Johann Georg Reibmüller of the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, a German daily newspaper, wrote, quote, the U.S. government is not at all happy with Germany's policy in Kosovo, unquote. It was, however, exactly that year, 1997, that the crisis in Kosovo began to escalate. After the destruction of the Albanian army arsenals, the KLA armed itself in order to start a large-scale nationalist rebellion. This development and the following counterattack by the Serbian police moved Kosovo into the headlines and into the focal point of NATO's considerations. How did Germany and the United States react? Quote, the Clinton administration is still uncertain about how to deal with this crisis, later wrote the weekly newspaper Die Zeit. A senior official from the German Foreign Office was sent to Washington to put pressure on the Deputy Secretary of State, Strobe Talbot. We urgently need U.S. leadership now, claimed Germany's emissary. This pattern, Germany calls for the U.S. government, actually for a special wing of the U.S. government, to act against Yugoslavia, and those calls were repeated between March of 1998 and March of 1999 over and over again. Let us now take a closer look at that pre-war diplomacy, which in turn paved the way to war. The U.S. government is responsible for most of the war crimes NATO committed against Yugoslavia. But even in 1998, the Clinton administration split in several factions on how to deal with Milosevic and the Kosovo Albanians' nationalism, hesitated to act, reacting uncertainly on a case-by-case basis, oscillating between supporting the KLA and letting Milosevic have a free hand in smashing them. Germany, on the other hand, knew what to do and how to act. The grand design of Germany's Kosovo policy had been in effect by March of 1998. It was revealed by Germany's informal ambassador to the Balkans, Christian Schwarz-Schilling, who on March 16, 1998, said, quote, We should try to tell Milosevic the plain truth through pressure and even military interventions that he can retain control over Kosovo as a part of Yugoslavia only if certain fundamentals are met. And if this is not the case, the territory there will have to be transformed into a kind of protectorate until those fundamentals, unquote, are provided for. Again, end quote. Now note here how the Green Coalition under Schroeder and Joschka Fischer supported the going native policy that led first to war in Kosovo and also considerable war crimes committed by the U.S., basically acting as something of a cat's paw here for German Realpolitik, although using its own motivations. Continuing here, the idea of pushing the Kosovo's Albanians towards a military confrontation with Milosevic in order to create a Kosovo protectorate from now on became the central point of Germany's Kosovo policy, either by the Kohl-Kinkel CDU government and or the Schroeder-Fischer SPD-Green coalition. One condition was that international troops be stationed on Kosovo soil. As early as March of 1998, Germany accordingly put this matter on the agenda at the London meeting of the International Contact Group on Yugoslavia. The other condition was that NATO would have to enter Kosovo against the will of the Yugoslav government. Accordingly, Germany sharpened its tone towards Belgrade. Milosevic became the main target and remained so whatever his policy looked like. But France, the UK, Italy, and the dominating voices within the U.S. government still preferred to follow a less confrontational policy. In 1998, the European, for example, stated that, quote, Washington realized that pushing the Kosovars towards a military confrontation with Milosevic, as the Germans wanted to do, would have a boomerang effect on the Balkans. The United States put maximum pressure on Germany to stop supporting the KLA behind the scenes, as did the other European countries such as Britain and France, unquote. They termed the KLA activities terrorist and supported indirectly a Serbian counteroffensive against the KLA during the summer of 1998 and appealed to Milosevic and the moderate Albanian leader Rugova to begin talks. The KLA, however, succeeded in provoking the Serbian police force and in escalating armed clashes time and again. Bear in mind that the KLA was descended from the 21st or Skanderbeg Division, an Albanian Muslim Waffen-SS division that fought with the Nazis in World War II, and that in turn became the basis of the KLA, much as the 13th Waffen-SS, a Bosnian Muslim Waffen-SS division, became the foundation for the revival of the Hanjar division in the 1990s. Continuing. The policy of de-escalation turned out to be a permanent failure as long as there was a continuity in the supply of KLA weapons and KLA mercenaries across the Albanian border. It was therefore not at all surprising that in the summer of 1998, all the efforts of the United Nations and the majority of NATO countries, including the U.S., concentrated on the goal of cutting off the arms and soldiers' supplies in favor of the KLA. The Albanian government, headed by Fatos Nano, who had disassociated himself from the KLA, supported this plan. Inside NATO, the idea of sending 7,000 soldiers to cut off the traffic in weapons began to take shape. During this crucial situation, however, Germany's covering up for the KLA became both public and evident. The German government vetoed the cutting off of the supply of weapons for the KLA. Klaus Kinkel, formerly head of the BND, the German intelligence service, and then head of the German Foreign Office, said, quote, "Of course you have to consider whether you are permitted from a moral and ethical point of view to prevent the Kosovo Albanians from buying weapons for their self-defense," unquote. Filker Rue, then head of the Ministry of Defense, answered to this consideration with an unequivocal no, quote, "You cannot resolve the Kosovo conflict by sending troops to Albania to seal the border and thus be acting in favor of Milosevic," unquote. Volkerua's message was quite clear. Everyone who tries to seal the border in order to find a peaceful solution is taking sides with Milosevic. In order to dissociate yourself from Milosevic, you have to escalate the war between the Kosovo Albanians and the Serbs by delivering more and more weapons to the KLA. This open German solidarity with the KLA has been as much an isolated provocation as has the recognition of Tudjman's Croatia in 1991, 50 years after the formation of the first Croatian state under the rule of the fascist Ustaše regime. Just like 1991, Germany again stood nearly alone against a huge majority of countries in Europe and the world. Just like 1991, Germany again supported a movement with a background rooted in the Nazi past, because the KLA is partly led by the sons and grandsons of extreme right-wing Albanian fighters, the heirs of those who fought during World War II in the fascist militias and the Skanderberg Volunteer SS division raised by the Nazis. The National Front of Albania, or Bali Kombatar, which collaborated with Nazi leaders in 1943 and 4, today boasts about its influence within the KLA, which has a program that seems to be a modified version of the 1943 Nazi utopia. Thus, the program of ethnic cleansing, which Germany supported in the Balkans in 1941, remained alive within the movement of the Kosovo Albanian nationalists during the 1980s. "The nationalists have a two-point platform," unquote, wrote the New York Times in 1982. "First, to establish what they call an ethnically clean Albanian republic, and then the merger with Albania to form a greater Albania." Whenever the KLA talks of liberation, unquote, or freeing, unquote, this has been up to now understood in the Nazi sense of free of something, i.e. free of Jews, Judenfrei, free of gypsies, or free of Serbs. None could really be surprised when, or no one could really be surprised when, beginning with June of 1999, the de facto rule of the KLA turned out to be a daily and deadly trap for thousands of non-Albanians, especially defenseless Serbs. And this entire paper will be available. You've already heard most of it. It will be available in the For the Record supplemental section in its entirety. And again, one of the things that's important to understand here is the solidarity of the Greens and the Green Coalition with this. As we're going to look at in Side 2, there was an element, a green wing of the original Nazi Party under Hitler, that in turn has evolved and maintains influence within the contemporary green milieu, including the Green Party in Germany, and as we'll see weeks down the line, apparently in the Green Party in the U.S. as well. It's sort of a folkish, blood-and-soil mystifying or mystical concept. We'll explore it at greater length in weeks to come. And talking about the Green support for this going native philosophy of destabilization, skipping down in Matthias Kunzel's paper, "Even Germany's red-green coalition government does not want to recognize Kosovo as being a province of Yugoslavia. That is the reason why, in his last major statement, Joschka Fischer, Germany's vice chancellor and secretary of state, let the question of the future status of the Kosovo open, claiming that it would be impossible to resolve this now. In an interview with a French newspaper, however, he made clear that he had no doubts about the Kosovo's future status. Quote, "The international community is present in Kosovo and the Balkans in order to show that, according to the example of resolving the German question in 1990, the Albanian question could be resolved only with the agreement of the neighboring states." More about the Green Party and fascist infiltration of same in the next broadcast. This concludes For the Record 627, Going Native, Part 4, Reflections on the Secession of Kosovo. This is being recorded on March 9th of 2008. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.